Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Compliance Week news podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week, and today we're going to be talking about a new EPA rule that requires companies to measure and report their greenhouse gas emissions. And this is the first rule ever by the EPA to require that sort of environmental disclosure. Joining us to talk about how this rule is going to work is Craig Moyer. He is head of the Energy and Environmental Practice at the law firm of Manat Phelps and Phillips out in California. Craig, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
It's my pleasure, Matt.
Now, first question, walk us through exactly which companies fall under this rule's jurisdiction. Supposedly, companies with less than 25,000 tons of emissions would be exempt, so that's most small companies. I hear various industrial sectors will actually be excluded until the EPA makes further rules specifically for them. So can you just walk us through who really is in the crosshairs of this rule that has just been passed?
Sure, Matt. So 25,000 tons of CO2 equivalent is the general threshold.
Mm-hmm.
We've got two things that are probably worth talking about. One, exempt categories, or at least currently exempt categories. They include the ethanol producers, oil and natural gas systems, underground coal mines, wastewater treatment, and certain facilities that EPA just wasn't quite sure how to deal with. They're going to be held for a later day.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got certain categories that will be in no matter what, petroleum refiners. Now, most of those would be over 25,000 tons of CO2 equivalent per year anyway, but they're in without regard, there are certain of these sources that are going to be in without regard to their volumes. So as far as which ones are in the crosshairs currently, I think anybody who's near that 25,000 ton per day limit is going to have to do the work necessary and find out whether they're in. And there's very significant consequences to being in, because once you're in, it doesn't matter next year. You're going to be in for the next 5 years and have to report whether or not you actually achieve the 25,000-ton threshold.
Mm-hmm.
So some very important decisions need to be made very quickly. And since this rule begins to take effect on January 1, 2010, there's really not a whole lot of time to figure these things out.
And now, would this rule also encompass, say, you've got a large office building or something, but the heaters or the boiler systems to keep this building warm? I mean, are the emissions from those counted in whatever sort of cap or analysis that you need to do?
They would be, and indeed, EPA acknowledges that it's analyzing both upstream and downstream. So essentially, those things can be double counted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so the natural gas production is one factor here, and that'll all be calculated in the so-called upstream. Additionally, downstream will have to be counted, and that means all of the users of that natural gas, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's very unlikely that any building will hit 25,000 tons of CO2 equivalent per year. 25,000 tons is about 2,300 homes.
Okay.
That's about the threshold. Well, think about it for an asphalt plant. Almost everybody has seen an asphalt batch plant.
Sure.
It would take a very large asphalt batch plant to do it. Most of the asphalt plants would be under that 25,000-ton threshold.
So I'm trying to get a sense of the real challenge for companies in figuring out their compliance here. Is it really going to be documenting what all their emissions are and reporting them correctly, or will there still actually be real technology problems on, you know, scientifically, how do I go out and measure these gas outputs that I may or may not be making?
I think it's a little of both. Certainly, to the extent that natural gas, which is the most common feedstock for manufacturing operations, it's just a matter of calculating the therms that are used and the efficiencies in the operation, and it's a relatively straightforward calculation. The challenge comes in where you have additional sources that go above and beyond the traditional natural gas combustion, and many facilities will have those challenges.
So Now, how can they go about solving this? I guess, you know, who should they be looking to for guidance on it? I suppose you're going to give a plug for outside counsels here, but are there other specialty firms or companies out there that can assist them with this?
Well, for the first few months, there isn't really much that can be done. There's just not enough time to put systems into place, which is why during the first 3 months of the program, January 1, 2010 to March 31, 2010, EPA has allowed best available methods to do the calculation. And they define that in some detail, what they will allow. The rule is quite detailed in what in how the calculations go forward. And interestingly, unlike California, where I'm from, has had a greenhouse gas bill since 2006, and the first step in any significant rulemaking or other regulatory program is to evaluate, is to quantify the emissions, and that's where we are in greenhouse gases. California had third-party verification, independent third-party verification required. EPA's rule does not require that. It requires the company to do the calculation and then EPA verification.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that you cannot use that independent third-party verification, and I think that that will be a wise choice for many companies with complicated programs.
Well, actually, this is a question that just popped into my mind, but the disclosures they're making, I guess my first question is, they're going to be reporting this to whom? Is it the EPA, or do they have a standardized form or already or a format to make this information public? Is that end of it been clarified?
Yes, and this is an EPA reporting rule, but you're touching on a very important issue, and that is that this impacts cost. This is not just a rulemaking for regulatory purposes. That's the first step in the process, as I mentioned before. That's the but it's not the last step in the process of greenhouse gas controls.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these companies are going to be publicly traded companies, which already have an SEC obligation. How companies deal with their SEC obligations and the future costs and the future implications of the regulatory program are going to be very interesting. And it's going to be, again, a trap for the unwary. If you make report something inconsistent today and to EPA and tomorrow to the Securities and Exchange Commission as a part of your 10-K or 10-Q.
That's where I was going with this. I was wondering if it is analogous to a disclosure that you make in your 10-K where legal liability is attached, and you know, if you're wildly off on that, you can get into some serious trouble with shareholder lawsuits. And I'm wondering if something similar could be at risk for these disclosures you're making on greenhouse gas emissions to the EPA.
Yes, it definitely. And I see this as where the future is going. Indeed, for some time, we've struggled with how to make these disclosures to the Securities and Exchange Commission. There are a number of companies that have detailed disclosures in their SEC filings.
Mm-hmm.
The SEC has to date felt uncomfortable in analyzing things like greenhouse gases or frankly other environmental liabilities.
Yeah.
Recently, however, earlier this month, the SEC Commissioner Walter said they're taking a good close look at this. They're seriously looking at their disclosure system in this area, and although they're not do not claim to be climate experts, they do see this as an area for future interpretive guidance regarding disclosure. Other folks like FASB have taken a look at this, and I think that this is going to be an area that has to be looked at in the future because there will be costs associated with it. And not just the companies that are actually emitting, but the insurance companies, for example, the banks, because insurance companies will have liabilities that are going to come down the pike as a result of climate change, the banks that have maybe loaning money and have these indirect implications on their portfolios. So this EPA rulemaking is really the first step in a brand new path.
Well, then one last question. I also was going to ask whether Congress is, or does Congress have a sense of when they might act on any climate change legislation, or are these rules that we're talking about maybe an attempt by the agencies to get ahead of this curve before Congress gets ahead of it for them, so to speak?
Well, there's Waxman-Markey has passed out of the House, and next week the Senate Environment Public Works Committee, Barbara Boxer's committee, will do a markup on the Senate version of the climate change bill. I don't think we'll see climate change legislation before Copenhagen in December, but it's possible. More likely, though, we'll see that something come out of it next year after Copenhagen. And certainly, a theme that I'm trying to convey here is that this is the first step in the process, and no matter how you choose to regulate greenhouse gases, the first step is to quantify them. And that's true in every other environmental regulatory regime. So this quantification step will have serious implications for companies that are going to have repercussions later on.
Okay. Well, Craig, that is all the time we have today, but you covered plenty of ground here, so we really appreciate you taking all the time today.
It's been my pleasure again, Matt. Thanks for your help.
And again, everybody, that was Craig Moyer of the law firm Minot, Phelps & Phillips talking with us about the EPA's new rule for climate change disclosure. That is all for this week's podcast. I am Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you join us again next time.